by changing the frame of reference, people can perform at a very different level. So the real job of a good coach, in this case, performance coach, is just changing the frame of reference, if you think about it.
Welcome to the X Factor, where we visit with private equity leaders to unpack a compelling area of value creation to help our listeners gain an edge as they grind toward a liquidity event of their own. X Factor is presented by Private Equity CXO, the world's largest digital community of PE-backed executives. You can find a link to PECXO in the description to start your free membership and unlock exclusive content. I'm your host, Rob Huxtable, partner at Falcon, a retained executive search firm exclusively recruiting C-suite leaders for private equity-owned portfolio companies. Today, I'm joined by human performance and leadership advisor, Andrea Petrone, to discuss the impact of executive coaching and a performance mindset within private equity. Andrea, welcome, and let's get into it.
Thank you so much, Rob, for inviting me. It's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to having a great conversation.
Yeah, terrific. And Andrea is certainly familiar with working with private equity-backed CXOs, and we're going to tailor our conversation specifically to the nuances of thriving in those kind of environments. But Andrea, let's start with dispelling, if you don't mind, a couple of myths around executive coaching. So let me set up a premise. So sometimes private equity can be seen as this harsh, unforgiving environment where only the strong survive, and something like vulnerability may be perceived as a weakness instead of a strength. I believe the opposite, that vulnerability is absolutely a superpower. And so in that vein, I think sometimes executive coaching is considered something that less capable or weaker CXOs need to seek out to try to fix something that's wrong. And what I've seen, whether it's in the world of sports or finance or business or private equity, is that the more elite the leader, the more likely they are to lean into performance coaching to get to the nth degree of their potential. So when you think about performance coaching versus maybe mainstream misperceived executive coaching, just tell our audience what that means to you.
Yeah, so that is a great question. And with this question, we can probably go for more than an hour, but I'll try to go on point and maybe explain, Rob, what I see and what are the major differences. So first of all, what you represented just a few minutes ago, you know, this idea of this misconception about executive coaching is something for weak people or those people they need some sort of fix in order to perform a different level. It's just one of the major barriers that we still have in business. And I would say, based on my experience, the level of or the number of people at the very, very top they're actually having right now an executive coach is increasing. No matter whether they are backed by private equities or privately owned companies, it doesn't matter. I think the impact of coaching, of executive coaching to individuals now is so clear and evident that now it has started to be embraced by many. So it's not at all about fixing people, because by the way, we can't fix people even if we want to. It's more about enhancing their ability to succeed at a different level. And that's why I think the word performance coaching sits quite well, at least with me, because my experience has been always, I'm coming from the business. So I'm not a coach coming from the HR world. I don't have a degree in psychology or sociology. I have a degree of business, and I've been working as a leader for many years. And what I recognize is many people, they're really challenged to hire a coach because they thought coaching is not enhancing the experience, their abilities, because it's someone doesn't know the business, and someone doesn't know how to help them, is someone that hasn't never been in the client's shoes. These are very valid potential objections. Now, if you are someone maybe like me that has a very long, many years as a senior executive career, and doing executive and performance coaching at the same time, it actually helps to create the empathy and trust with the client, with the coachee, because it's essentially I really understand where they are in their journey, and I'm able to provide ideas, insights that they did not consider before. But they will appreciate from me because they understand I'm coming from a different background and I've been in their shoes. That is a major difference of coaches out there. The word performance, though, is because not all traditional coaching is the only solution for driving performance in an organization. You have to do something more. Now, because I have a background in neuroscience, I know that the only reason, the only way to drive performance in any organization, either for ourselves or for the business, is by, of course, changing our actions. But by the only way to change our actions is by shifting our mindset. So most of my work is actually in the connection between mindset, action, and performance. That's why I'm a performance coach. And maybe some of you, Rob, in the audience will probably remember the famous, you know, TV show Billions, when there was a lady, I don't remember her name, there was a performance coaching organization. And I remember all the traders, you know, going to her office, knocking the door and said, "I can't perform, I can't perform." And she gave like 2 minutes tip, and then they leave the office and now they started to perform again. Doesn't really work in that way. But the good news is when you work on a mental shift on people, you can really see people perform at very different levels. So that's, if you like, is a different nuance, a different call over traditional executive coaching.
Yeah, I think my understanding of coaching has a lot to do with perspective and mindset and how an individual chooses to interpret the events of their life and whether or not that interpretation creates fear, doubt, uncertainty, and hesitation. Or on the other hand, if that interpretation creates action and momentum and forward progress for the individual. And people believe that their reality today is their truth. And that's an interesting concept to try to reframe, but there's a whole other lens that can be adopted, I think. And I've certainly noticed that in the highest performing executives we've placed versus folks that we have seen do less well. Mindset is the foundation for sure.
You hit the nail here, Rob. So that's what I really think is interesting is, when you think with that lens, so by changing the frame of reference, people can perform a very different level. So the real job of a good coach, in this case, performance coach, is just changing the frame of reference, if you think about. If I'm able to change the frame of reference of someone, it can see clearly things in a different way. Now they can really perform a different set of actions, and performance are a result of actions. So it's not so complicated, but if you're able to work on the mental shift, people can really, and I can guarantee because I have seen this, people can really at any level can really achieve what I call extraordinary results, extraordinary performance. Why is it extraordinary? It's not just a buzzword. Extraordinary because it's something that is not ordinary, right? But the only way to do it is by shifting your perspective. Because if you are stuck in seeing the world in front of you always the same way, your action will be always consistent with that view. So by changing a view, people can really do something different, which is something extraordinary.
Before we pivot directly into the realities of succeeding in a private equity-backed environment, let's just talk about what you've seen over the last 18 to 24 months and in the current environment more broadly. So we've got geopolitical instability, we've got interest rate pressures, we've got full employment, a lot of pressure to grow, and, you know, finite resources with which to make that happen. So any high-level guidance that you've offered your clientele to how to adapt to the current environment before we dig into private equity specifically?
Yeah, to me, Rob, I think is one thing. I don't even want to go into all the market trends, all the changes, technology, AI. There is something more profound, in my opinion, that is happening right now. Is this idea that the level of uncertainty is increasing incredibly quick, right? So our leaders right now, either the CEOs or the CXOs, they are facing something they did not face before. So the pace of change is so high, they need to adapt very quickly to the current reality and be successful in a shorter period of time. And I know sometimes, you know, when we work and when I work with leaders, we create the future, and the future is really 5-7 years. But here's the interesting thing. At the moment, they can't really afford just to work on the future. They need to produce results in a very short period of time. Now, for many people, I'm sure that that resonates with you, Rob, it's difficult to do both, to provide short-term results, meanwhile thinking and creating and shaping the future for the organization. So here's the interesting idea for me is you must be able to deal with the ambiguity of the current situation. And ambiguity is essentially, I'm able to provide results right now, but meanwhile, I'm thinking and creating the future for my organization. Now, that just sounds like kind of easy things to do, but it's very complicated. Why? Because people, when they are so stressed or they focus on short-term results and maybe they're in crisis, the only thing they can see, going back to perception, right? The only thing that they can see is the burning platform, right? Is the crisis, is the fire under their house. So they can't really think about the future. Now, my suspicion right now is only those leaders that will be able to work on a burning platform, meanwhile creating that future that is ambitious, that is bold, is important for investors, is important as well for employees, they're going to succeed. So I think I'm seeing at the moment a shift in terms of what kind of leaders we need in the future.
Okay, great. So pivoting into the realities of the private equity backed world, I have affectionately called working for a portfolio company a crucible environment where high temperature, lots of pressures will reveal the metal, so to speak, of the individual, and it's not for everyone. And I wanted to talk through some of the behaviors that time and again help distinguish the very successful from those that are less so, and just have you help us unpack the psychology or mindset perhaps behind each one of them. So the first topic, I would say, speed and volume of decision-making. My perspective on this is that private equity intends to own a business for a finite period of time, call it 4 to 5 years. They have incredibly ambitious goals to 3 to 5x the valuation of the company so that their multiple of return can be even greater than that number. And there's no patience for moving the ball down the field. And yet a lot of leaders sort of feel most comfortable with de-risking decision-making, getting all the information before making a call, and being a little bit more thoughtful and methodical. And that just does not work in this environment. So what do you see on that front? And maybe what's a mindset tip or two to help people that struggle with a little ambiguity and need to lean a little bit more into being decisive with a majority of information versus methodical with all of the information?
Yeah, I mean, what you say is definitely what I see as well, you know, with my clients, but also with the people I interview in, you know, my show, the World Class Leader Show, where I interview, you know, CEOs, the other CXOs, and they share the same thing. They have been, I would say, forced, and primarily those leaders, they are PE-backed, but not only them. But honestly, there is definitely an increased number of people that are facing that challenge that you describe in the PE-backed companies. So I think most of them, they really learned, and that was not an easy journey for them. They really learned of making decision without, you know, all the information available to them. And that's for some of people is very difficult because all of us have some sort of tendency, right, to make decision according to a number of facts. So what I can tell you is it's really a mental shift here again, because what you really need to consider is you will never have all the information available to make a decision with the current pace of change that I just talked about. Is it just impossible? So the question is, how can you then make a decision when you don't have anything handy? So one thing is, and by the way, I think most of the leaders have this incredible capacity, ability, is to make some more gut decision. So essentially, you know, feeling and listening a little bit more to instinct, because the instinct is, I still believe, is one of the most important traits a leader have. But sometimes we tend to disregard instinct because we believe that, you know, we have more data available. Now, here's what I find particularly interesting. Those leaders, they really struggle with that. They always look for more information, right? Now, when you're looking for more information, essentially what you're going to do is increasing complexity in the organization. Why? Because the more data you have available, or the more data you want in order to make a decision, the more requests you're going to make to the business to measure everything you do. And by measuring everything you do, you're going to increase definitely the level of complexity of what you do, like complicated systems, processes, new RPAs, or you name them, right? It sounds like that you need more protection from a lot of tools, processes, systems in order to feel much more certain about the decision you make. But actually, you're making disservice to yourself, because by increasing all the complexity, by using all of that, you're going to have much more data point, and the data point will just complicate or confuse you more than what it was before. I hear so many times leaders say, we need to simplify the business. We need to simplify the business. So my recommendation is start to just measure what really matters, because not everything matters. I've seen leaders with scorecards and dashboard of, 10, 15 pages. Ridiculous. There's no point. There's no value in performance. So my question is, if you really want to make faster decision, trust your instinct first, and second, measure only what matters and simplify what you can. Otherwise, you're going to just increase the number of things that are around you. And again, data points are great, but as you know, it's not by increasing the data point you're going to make better decision. It's just measuring what really matters to the business.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an important point, because my sense is that one of the areas of confusion that is faced by private equity backed CXOs is that they're told constantly, I want you to be a data driven decision maker. We're private equity. We're into KPIs and analytics and BI, and we want as much information as we can get. Well, that's for them to pore over in the minutiae. And I think the simplification idea is maybe sounds straightforward and obvious, but it's not adopted by too many people, let's say. And being more thoughtful about the KPIs and dashboard elements that are worthy of your time and attention. And then accepting the fact that if I'm going to move fast, I'm going to occasionally make mistakes, and that's okay. I'm going to quickly adjust and adapt, course correct, move on, and try not to repeat them. But it's sort of leaning into playing offense, I guess, versus playing not to lose.
Yeah, and look, that reminds me of a great interview I had with the CEO of a great company in the US. But he created really a culture of failure and talking about failure and understanding about failure, where everybody is not only expected to fail, but is accepted. Everything is accepted. Failure is accepted as long as there is a very quick remediation, as you say. So this culture of we can fail, but we can pivot fast because we learn and we can do things differently, I think that is really underrated. And I can say, I think that PEs will be very happy to consider that as a cultural shift, as long as they see there is an immediate reaction after a potential risk that you take. But you're right. I think that is a very interesting point what you said. You know, some PEs, maybe they are triggering their behaviors in people, right? Because they're asking for more data, they're asking for more measurements. Now, my suggestion is not measuring or stop measuring, it's just measuring really what matters. And who better than the CXOs understand their business and know what really matters, how to measure it? PEs, in the best case scenario, they have some sort of standards, they sort of high level KPIs they want to. But here's what I found. The more requests coming from the PEs, the more they feel uncomfortable about the decision that the company is making. Because when they feel confident, because they see the numbers, they see the right numbers, and they see action around it, my experience is they're not going to ask for more data points. So I think we have to balance a little bit and see why they're asking for more data points. And normally when they do, because they don't feel comfortable about the current situation.
Yeah, so let's segue into a related topic, which is this tricky balance of how to best manage up to your private equity board of directors. And we'll use the KPI as the segue. So for example, they love data, they can't get enough of it, and sometimes they want it so badly that they may not realize they are introducing unnecessary complexity into the business and distracting the management team from what matters most. And so what I've seen is that the best portfolio company executives know how to strike this balance of managing up to their board, where on one hand, they're respectful, accommodative, and collegial, and they never forget that the private equity firm is their owner and their boss, who has their own bosses, which are the LP investors. At the same time, they are confident and advancing their own ideas within the board so that it is a shared view forward, as opposed to being assigned a view, you know, by private equity exclusively. And if people skew one direction or the other, it's a real problem. If you're too accommodative, they will eventually tire of you and you'll be moved out. If you are not able to manage up, that's a problem. On the other hand, if you're too alpha and you're too independent and you keep your sponsor at arm's length, they're not going to care for that either. So what comes to mind when you think about this balance of respectful collaboration paired with ambitious confidence?
It comes down to the connection that exists. So it doesn't exist between the leadership team and the board. Because, look, it's like any other situation where there are different teams, where there are different objectives to some extent, because actually the objective should be shared, should be agreed, and there should be an alignment between the leadership team and the board. But even the board, the composition of the board, sometimes implies that everyone at the table might have a slightly different objective. There's no helping, right? Nonetheless, I think it's really about the connection that exists. Now, what I've seen, and circling back what I said before, is it's like any other situation or relationship. When you don't feel confident about what's going on in your portfolio company, you're going to start to ask more. You're going to start to ask more, checking more, asking more data, asking more report, asking more, you know, broadly speaking. And if you feel sort of a victim of that situation because you are not in control, because you're not standing power in front of the board will be even more demanding, right? And as you said, if you lower down yourself, because every single time, you know, you feel like you are just reacting to the board, that's exactly what's going to happen. So board is going to be more demanding. So it's really a matter of balancing forces. I've seen the contrary too, as you said. I've seen leaders in organization, you know, they're standing up powerfully and essentially they're saying to the board, I run the business, leave it to me. I'm going to keep you updated. I'm going to give you what you need for, but leave me alone. Leave me, you know, lead my own business, etc. Now, when the business is going well, that is a powerful positioning to have. Now, to me, the real balance is when the leadership team really involves the board in the process. Meaning, it's not like I'm going to send you a report once per month. We're going to have the board meeting every 3 months. It's more about involving, first of all, on one-to-one basis. I haven't seen many CXOs talking to the board members. I haven't. I see the CEO talking to the board members, primarily the chair, but also with other people. But CXO, sometimes, yeah, there are some, you know, commissions or there are some sort of groups that are formed with the board. But my suggestion would be create a one-to-one connection with the board members for two reasons. One, to involve them in what is happening in the business, but also to start creating, you know, your own strong position in front of them. They want to see, they want to understand you personally. Otherwise, they have only one filtered version, which is the version of the CEO. And also, the other approach I would like to give is be very open and transparent. I've seen leadership teams not be like that, not really being transparent, say something like, yeah, I'm not going to say everything to the board. I'm going to hide this because, I don't want to scare them. That is going to have a, you know, completely opposite result than what you probably wish for. The board will be more inquisitive, say, why I don't know about this, especially if they found out. So really, relationship, connection, openness, transparency, because you are together. And I think finally it's important, Rob, to ask a fundamental question around the table. I want to say around the table is the board and leadership team is, why this is important to all of us? The why? Because why, the purpose really clarifies where everybody is standing for. And that is important because if the for a CFO, what is important is different than what is important for the board, that is not going to work as a relationship. So These are three or four fundamental questions and suggestions I will probably share.
Now, I think we've done conversations in the past with accomplished CXOs and talked about board governance. And a real takeaway for me has always been your board is there and your job is to use them to advance your shared objectives. And too many CXOs accommodate their boards or try to survive them. And all things equal, they'd maybe rather not engage unless necessary at a weekly call, monthly operating review, or quarterly board meeting. And then on transparency, I couldn't agree more. An old adage that I hear often is good news fast, bad news faster. So transparency, openness, you're not going to do yourselves any favor by delaying shared information. And then understanding the why, I think, is critical, because there are arguments that a management team could make about why something should get done. And in a vacuum, that makes sense, because if you're just talking about a company and its priorities, okay, fine, we're going to agree that that's a logical approach. But private equity has its own demands and requirements for how that company has to perform across its lifetime arc of investment, where it sits in the broader portfolio of the other companies that they own, when it might be going to market, how to think through, focus on revenue growth versus EBITDA margins or a combination thereof. And the more that management can understand why private equity is doing what it's doing, the more they can pick their battles. So I agree with those insights.
One thing I would say, adding and building on your first point, when you said, you know, involving the board, I can tell you how many times I heard when I interviewed them, board members say, I'm really here to support the leadership team. They need to use me. Please call me. Please involve me in some specific meetings. Please involve me in some strategic decision. Actually, they're generally offering help. But the perception, again, is from many people in the management team is, oh, no, they're here to judge us. They're here to fire us. Who knows? They're here to make decisions about us. They're here to make different directions of where we want to be. So we want to be protective. This idea about being protective, I think it's completely wrong. Now, I appreciate in some situations, there is some sort of not very healthy relationship between the leadership team, the company, and the board. But in the reality, look, it should be really one single team working together at a different level. When I've seen boards and leadership team operating with a level of openness, transparency, involvement, conversations, I remember I facilitated a session with a leadership team, and they invited three or four, so subject matter experts, sorry, from the investors. It was smashing. It was great because they felt into the conversation. They provided a lot of great advice. There was back and forth, listening, making new and better decisions about that specific project. It's empowering. So why not using the full capacity of a board? So again, we live in a world where there are two different, unfortunately, very fixed perspective about the relationship that they have with each other. And we need to break that, because when you do it, you start to see companies operating in a very different way.
Yep, agreed. So there's a lot we could cover around the specific pressures of being a private equity-backed executive, but in the spirit of our listeners' time and the power of groups of three, let's pivot onto a third and final topic, which I think is really fascinating, because there was a Boston Consulting survey years ago where they asked a bunch of CXOs, what do you think is most important to your private equity investors? And then they asked those same private equity investors, what do you wish your management teams thought was most important? And there were a few areas of alignment and a few areas of disconnect. But the most severe area of disconnect is that CXOs are under the misperception all too often that their board would like them to focus on strategy and risk mitigation. Meanwhile, the private equity sponsors believe in their hearts that execution eats strategy for lunch, and that we are here to put risk on. That's a phrase that, for our listeners, if you're not familiar, private equity uses all the time. They're writing capital checks and they are putting risk on the table, and it's your job to perform in that environment. So what are your thoughts on executive who might understand the concept of why execution and risk on matters, but struggle with the idea that, gosh, strategies may be more fun and interesting. And I also don't want to put the company in danger. So maybe I'll still stay overly anchored in risk mitigation.
So first of all, I did not know about this interesting research and survey. I think that's really enlightening. So my view on this data, I think, Robbie, is Bohr really not defining or, you know, pointing the company to pursue one strategy over the other. Absolutely not. Actually, they expected that the strategy is coming from the leadership team, and they can say agree or don't agree, or they can say why this and why that, why this first and why the other, what's the financial implication? You know, all the typical good question, right? But what I think implies, what you just shared with me, is the one of the major issues that all organizations are facing right now, which is execution. So most likely, boards, they are complaining or concerning about the ability of organizations, their portfolio companies, to execute their strategy, I think is fair. And it's fair because, broadly speaking, there is a very low level of confidence in investors, in leaders, in the ability of organization to execute what they strategize for. And the major reason for that is hearing leaders say, we are not moving past here in the organization. We need to go back and forth with the decision that we have already made. Or our people are disengaged, so we don't know how to motivate them. So it sounds like we are really going so slow. They're all good, valid reasons. In my line of work, Rob, I think is the key for an effective execution is always starts again at the top level. So the reason why most of the time organizations, they really struggle to execute the strategy is because the strategy is not clear, or because there are so many contradictory points in the strategy, or it's clear on the short term, but it's not clear for people what's going to happen in the future. So there are so many different reasons, including wrong communication or not empowering or enrolling communication from the leaders, that have actually a clear impact on the ability of people to execute. So they feel like they are in the middle of something and nothing's really is going to make a difference. And when people, they start losing hope that the new strategy will make a difference to them, they will really start working, you know, as ordinary, like average work. So I think going back to the point, so I digress a little bit, but is the fear of not able to execution is absolutely understandable. It's clear, it's there. The question to me is how the leadership team is defining a strategy. How is able to clarify what is in for the people and how they are communicating, you know, powerfully their strategy with the people. And also there's an element of clarity on roles and responsibilities, but that is just another factor. So I would say, as a summary, I would say, yeah, so there is an expectation strategy is defined by the board, but the reality is board is just waiting for organization to execute. I've never really seen a PA say something like, no, the strategy is totally wrong, change it and then do it again. Never seen that.
I think what I'm hearing you say, which resonates with me, is that strategy, of course, is important. We need an investment thesis that makes sense. The board's going to have a say in that, but they really do want management to step up. But it's your job as a management team to make sure that the strategy is so clear and so embedded in the DNA of the team from an understanding and motivational standpoint that focus can then swing away from strategic debate and really center on execution.
It's exactly that. I mean, they invested in their leaders. So the minimum expectation for a private equity is to have a leadership team that able to make decisions, to operate, to execute, and to alter the status quo. Otherwise, what's the point, right? Mm-hmm. What's the point investing in people if you're not able to step up as a leaders and to make things happen? And again, I think it's a fair expectation. So, and sometimes complexity, uncertainty, lack of ability to deal with ambiguity, and many other reasons, they essentially freeze many organizations. they freeze to the point that nobody's making the decision anymore. Or what they do, they go in silos. So some departments, some factions, they work better, some others they don't. But there's no really unity. There is no really collective ownership. And when the collective ownership is missing at that table, unfortunately, you know, the results are always, you know, are very bad.
Yeah, so I think my big idea here is that execution matters. There's no way you can succeed as a private equity-backed CXO if you are not a catalyst to increasing the momentum and velocity of the transformation of a business. Every human being has their own flaws and humanity that has them tapping the brakes, maybe more than pressing down on the gas. And who better than a performance coach to help make sure that that mindset and perspective is as oriented toward value creation and action as possible. So I think it makes a lot of sense, and I can understand why you have such a thriving practice. But for everybody out there in the audience, we'll have links to the following information in our show notes. But Andrea, for those that want more content that you're creating, how can they source that information?
You can find me on LinkedIn, where I write every single day about a few things, but primarily the life of a CEO. What does it mean leading a company right now? What does it mean being a leader as a CXO? What does it mean performance? How can you drive performance? So I'll talk about all of that, including mindset and leadership, every single day. But also I have a newsletter that goes out every week where I summarize all my learnings that, you know, from the work I do with the companies, but also is a summary of all the interviews I make to global CEOs. The interview on the World Class Leader Show is a global podcast. It's on audio, but also on video, on YouTube. It's thriving, it's growing a lot. The reason being because I invite really inspiring people and they share openly what they went through in their journey as leaders. And I think that's something that normally doesn't really happen because not everyone is so open to share and to talk openly about their life and what their challenges they're having. So have a look, because that would be probably interesting for you to listen to hear. That would be maybe helping you form some sort of opinion, or for whatever reason you follow leaders.
Okay, well, everybody, Andrea is not hard to find. Seek him out on the web or personally. And I want to thank you again for joining today and talking about a topic that doesn't get enough attention. It's just presumed that everyone knows what to do and how to do it. But the truth is that there are degrees to performance. And if we're really going to test the limits of our human potential, why not consider a performance coach to assist you on the journey?
Rob, thank you so much for inviting me. That was an amazing conversation, really. I appreciate the questions.
Okay, no, my pleasure. Thank you so much. Tune into our next episode with Managing Director of KeyBank Capital Markets, Arindam Basu, to discuss the deal markets and forward-looking macro conditions for deal-making activity that might find your next platform company or add-on acquisition. I'm Rob Huxtable, and thank you for listening to The X Factor.